Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
State lawmakers are lashing out or running for cover after the latest controversial remarks from President Donald Trump.
It appears that President Trump does not have an issue with immigrants. He has an issue with immigrants of color.
Also tonight, our reporters' roundtable talks about some of the week's highlights in the legislature.
That bill, which passed today, would ban sanctuary policies at the local government level.
We'll also hear how Florida's exploding opioid crisis is affecting the children of addicts. We'll learn that a cell phone, while contraband in a state prison, may not be much of a big deal in a county jail. And hear how Florida's movie business is collapsing. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the end of week one of the Florida legislative session, and this is Capitol Report. President Donald Trump's derogatory statements on Thursday about a number of countries are echoing through the Florida political landscape. Nick Evans has the story, and we give you this warning. The language here could be inappropriate for some listeners.
Friday morning, Donald Trump took to Twitter to dispute a Washington Post story which says the president used obscene language to describe Haiti, El Salvador, and a number of African countries as a bipartisan group of lawmakers unveiled an immigration measure. Shortly afterward, one of the deal's architects, Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin, fired back.
As Senator Graham made his presentation, the president interrupted him several times with questions, and in the course of his comments, said things which were hate-filled, vile, and racist. He used those words advisedly. I understand how powerful they are. But I cannot believe that in the history of the White House, in that Oval Office, any president has ever spoken the words that I personally heard our president speak yesterday.
Trump's comments are now resonating through Florida politics. Governor Rick Scott, an early and staunch Trump supporter, is distancing himself from the president, issuing a statement that says, quote, "If this report is true, it is absolutely wrong to say or think this. I do not think this way, nor do I agree with this kind of sentiment." A bipartisan group of House lawmakers, led by Speaker Richard Corcoran, issued another statement, saying, quote, "America's greatness is self-evident. We do not need to tear down other nations." But among Democrats, the response has been more heated.
President Trump referred to African countries, Haiti and El Salvador, as shithole countries.
This is Miami Senator Daphne Campbell, a Democrat who was born in Haiti.
He then suggested that United States should instead bring more people from countries like Norway. Why? Because they look like him. It appears that President Trump does not have an issue with immigrants. He has an issue with immigrants of color.
Campbell and Lantana Democratic Representative Al Jaquette are particularly discouraged by Trump's timing, coming just as people are marking the 8th anniversary of the 2010 earthquake that devastated Haiti.
So while we were preparing to be having a press conference in remembrance of the 500,000 people who lost their lives, countless displaced, we're addressing the degrading, demoralizing, disgusting remarks by someone who is supposed to be the face of our great nation.
And while some are asking for an official apology, West Palm Beach Democratic Senator Bobby Powell takes a harder line.
We don't ask you, we're telling you, because it's necessary. At some point, you can't do what you think is okay. You have to do what's right. And today, I stand unified with everyone behind me and those who you don't see, and we demand an apology.
Trump's presidential campaign was, at times, a daily reminder of his aversion to apologies, with some lawmakers present at the Oval Office meeting refusing to confirm Trump's comments, and two more contending they simply don't recall, it seems unlikely a presidential mea culpa is forthcoming. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
It is Friday. That means our roundtable here on Capitol Report with some of our Florida Public Radio correspondents, starting off with Lynn Hatter, who has been following Senate action today. What happened, Lynn?
We just saw the passage, actually Thursday, of one of the Senate's top priority bills, which was a proposal to expand Bright Futures. This would allow Bright Futures scholarships to cover books, tuition, and extend into the summer. So students who are going to summer school no longer have to pay for that out of pocket if they have a Bright Futures scholarship. That was a priority of Senate President Joe Negron, and he's very pleased that that has now come to pass, since part of this proposal actually ended up being vetoed by Governor Rick Scott last year. But one of the major things that has happened with the Senate is earlier this week, right as session was getting underway, as we saw Senate Pro Tem Ana Terry Flores and Senate Democratic Minority Leader Oscar Rainin essentially admitting to an extramarital affair. That has sort of been the new cloud, really, that has come to pass with this. And in fact, earlier this week, Senator Liz Beniquisto, who's the rules chair, said that her chamber is revising now its sexual harassment policies. Now, we know that an affair, a consensual affair, is not the same thing as sexual harassment, but that separate issue has been a problem with the resignation of a couple of key senators. And so Beniquisto says that the chamber is going in and is beginning to revise its internal policies related to that issue. So we're waiting and watching for those rules to come out.
It certainly was a unique way to kick off the start of the 2018 legislative session, for sure. But there's been an awful, awful lot more action that's been going on in the House, Kate Payne. They got off to just a roaring start this week. You've been following the action there. What's up?
House Speaker Richard Corcoran has made a big push to get certain priorities of his through the House. Really, the number one would be federal immigration enforcement. That bill, which passed today, would ban sanctuary policies at the local government level. And so that would force, you know, local sheriffs, local law enforcement to cooperate with federal immigration officials. And what we saw was that this debate, which has been going on for years, that the bill sponsor, Larry Metz, has brought this bill repeatedly and moved it through the House. But this year we saw what is usually a contentious debate sort of magnified and expanded by issues that are happening at the national level, with President Donald Trump making reportedly disparaging remarks about Haiti, El Salvador, and African countries. So we also saw a bill sort of regulating community redevelopment agencies, which is another bill that has come up in repeatedly in past years. And we've seen it evolve a lot from a measure that would totally shut down these agencies, which are sort of public-private partnerships to help local governments redevelop neighborhoods that are blighted, that have slums, and that need more affordable housing. And so in past years, it's been much more aggressive, sort of undermining these agencies. But this year, it did move forward. The House did pass it, but it's sort of a scaled back measure. And we actually saw some Republican lawmakers criticizing this new state regulation at the local level, saying it is, you know, overstepping state lawmakers' bounds.
Kate Payne and Lynn Hatter, Florida Public Radio. We will see you next week as we roll into week number two of the 2018 lawmaking session.
Sounds good, Tom. Thanks so much.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida's opioid crisis isn't only impacting those people addicted to the drugs, their children are also suffering.
We're seeing increased neglect and domestic violence and physical abuse and abandonment, and worse yet, child death.
Could county jail inmates be criminally charged when cell phones are found on their person? A bill starting to move in the legislature would do just that.
Well, what happens when we take the phone and we find that the person was just calling their kids? They're a felon.
And the battle for Florida's film and television industry has started in the Senate's latest bill.
The film industry is crucial to our state's economy, and we must do everything we can to ensure that Florida is the first choice for film and television productions.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
The Florida legislature didn't waste a moment this week when it came to addressing the opioid addiction crisis that's exploding across the state. But Duval County in the state's northeast corner has been particularly hard hit. Christine Meyer, the supervising attorney for the Guardian Ad Litem program there, is seeing the impact of the crisis on kids firsthand.
Just today in Jacksonville, there were 5 shelter hearings, resulting in the removal of 8 children, all due to the parents' substance abuse. And that's 5 out of 5 cases today. And it's what we're seeing every day in the courtroom. Over the last 2 decades that I've been doing this, the numbers have become staggering.
Meyer says the tragedy is expanding by both numbers and degree.
We're seeing increased neglect and domestic violence and physical abuse and abandonment, and worse yet, child deaths. At least 90% of our cases that are coming into the system have some component of substance abuse.
That's just in the Jacksonville area. Statewide Guardian Ad Litem Executive Director Alan Abramowitz says the number of kids being forced into foster care all over Florida is exploding.
In 2017, we had 39,417 children enter the foster care system. That means they were abused, neglected, or abandoned enough where Department of Children and Families, and in some communities the sheriff, had to remove the child so the child could be safe.
The good news, says Abramowitz, is that state officials at the highest level seem now to have a profound appreciation for the situation and are responding.
You heard the governor talk about the opioid crisis and the 50-plus million that is going to be dedicated to it. And you also heard Senate President talked about a multi-system approach to this. And the Guardian Ad Litem program is part of the solution with some of the bills we are championing to legislators.
It helps that one of those lawmakers has a deep personal connection to the issue. Fort Lauderdale Democrat Patricia Williams is herself a foster mom and a Guardian Ad Litem volunteer. A situation that especially concerns her is how, because of a lack of foster homes, siblings from a single family often find themselves headed in different directions.
When the kids are actually taken away and there's not enough foster parents in that county where they are, they're shipped across county lines. When they're shipped across county lines, then you have families that separated from each other.
Williams is advancing 3 bills to try and make the stay in foster care shorter for kids affected by the crisis. One would make sure that incarcerated parents spend their jail time planning for what happens after they're released.
So if they don't have a plan while they're incarcerated, it makes it longer for that child to be in the system itself. That's House Bill 281.
Williams is also pushing a bill to encourage more lawyers to donate their services to such cases.
And that helps the court system when they assign an attorney is willing to work on the case. They give them what we call pro bono. They're willing to work the case without a fee, but then they don't want to have to pull additional money out of their pocket to work a case to help a child.
And a third measure would prioritize the permanent adoption of children whose parents are just too far gone.
It speeds it up and give them the opportunity to receive a permanent home to be adopted from out of the system itself.
All of these, says Jacksonville's Christine Meyer, would greatly mitigate the impact on actual kids.
It is significant legislation. It is amazing, and it's a win for children across the state. And for me, as a child advocate, I am so excited and love knowing that there's going to be additional child-focused laws that we have that will help us assist in advocating for the best interest of these vulnerable children.
Other measures under discussion in the legislature include further limiting the amount of opioid painkillers doctors can write a prescription for, along with more substance abuse programs in the community and county jails. Should inmates be criminally charged when cell phones are found on their person? Well, that's pretty much what happens in Florida prisons, but in county jails, not so much. Sasha Cordner has more on the legislative debate surrounding a bill making it illegal for local jail inmates to have cell phones within the facilities.
In December 2016, an Orange County jail inmate was found with a cell phone. Jail staff did not know how it got there, and when they contacted the sheriff's office to investigate, their request was denied. Why? Because under current law, while state prisons consider cell phones as contraband, cell phones in county jails are not considered illegal, though they can be confiscated. Kelly Teague is the legislative affairs director with the Orange County government.
Some counties, the county runs the jail, and in some counties, the sheriff runs the jail. And so in our case, we run the jail, and we found a cell phone on someone, and we have found cell phones on people who are incarcerated before. We can't search them to figure out how they're getting in. We can take them because it's against the policies of the jail, but we cannot search them.
And Captain Dennis Strange with the Orange County Sheriff's Office says it can be difficult for jail staff to do their job.
Ultimately, right now, the way it stands is if an individual introduces a cigarette into the facility, they're given a what's called a discipline record. The individual is issued a disciplinary report. The same thing holds true with a cell phone. It's held in the same standard as introducing one single cigarette, that they basically have no teeth. And the cell phone creates a huge safety hazard for the individual, for the personnel inside the facility, inside the controlled facility.
So Teague and Strange are hoping lawmakers can step in and help them restrict access to cell phones within the jail facility. Mount Dora Republican Representative Jennifer Sullivan is sponsoring a measure to make that illegal in county detention facilities. Under her bill, violators caught with a cell phone would face a third-degree felony charge.
I think it's important because, there's a strategic reason that they shouldn't be having contact with the outside world, whether that's to hurt themselves or to hurt those around them or to contact someone perhaps that hasn't been, convicted yet or caught to proceed in whatever illegal action that they were planning or doing. I mean, I think it poses a huge security risk to have these inmates being able to make contact with anyone in the outside.
While the language actually mirrors what's in current state law for Florida prisons, the bill is drawing concerns among some lawmakers. Instead of a third-degree felony, some feel it should just be a misdemeanor. Others are not too fond of creating another criminal offense because of a cell phone. Coral Springs Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz says the way the bill is now, it's not getting to the root of the problem.
Well, what happens when we take the phone and we find that the person was just calling their kids? They're a felon. Or if we take the phone and we find out that they were trying to commit a crime, they're a felon. Why don't we punish what they were trying to do with the phone? The phone itself shouldn't be the felony. It should be what they were trying to do with it. I think that is what would protect the officers. I think that's what the officers want to know. They want to know what these phones, how they're getting in there. They want to know what they're doing with these phones.
Miami Democratic Representative David Richardson says he feels strongly most cell phones are brought in by corrupt jail staff, whom he says should be a target as well in the bill. He cites cases in which jailers help inmates set up innocent parties to take the fall.
Quite often, one gang will plant a cell phone in another gang's locker, and then they will rat them out, and then the officers will go find that cell phone, and then, of course, that person is now in trouble. So there's a lot of planting that's going on. And I want to highlight, when I say these phones are walking in the front door, I want to say that the vast majority of the staff and the officers at Florida Department of Corrections and in our correctional system and our jail system are doing the right thing. What I'm talking about is a few bad apples.
As for Sullivan, she says she's willing to work with other lawmakers to amend her bill.
I think we can. I know that we can make this better. But I will say I do think there needs to be a deterrent. I do think that there needs to be some type of deterrent so that people don't have these cell phones because it does pose a huge threat. And at the end of the day, right now, you know, our sheriffs, they don't have the tools to be able to search the phones, get to the bottom of what's going on. We need to equip them to be able to do that, to get to the bottom of this, and that's what this bill seeks to do.
And her bill passed with bipartisan support, with three Democrats opposed. It has two more committee stops before it heads to the floor. Meanwhile, its Senate companion bill has not yet had a hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kordner.
Companies that turn interns into employees could get tax credits under one legislative proposal under discussion. As Devondra Alston reports, the internship tax credit program will help degree-seeking students get a job after college.
Representative Chevron Jones wants to boost the chances of new college grads landing jobs.
The student benefit from it because once you graduate, you look for a job. And so if that company decides to keep you once you graduate, that's their benefit to it. So basically you're going to have to go on a large job hunt looking for work. The company can actually keep you based on your performance, of course.
Jones' proposed internship tax credit program would give businesses tax credits up to a specified amount for hiring their former interns. He says students would have better opportunities with job offers in the state they received their degree.
I think this is what we call smart policy. It keeps good talent here within the state of Florida. And once again, I think if we're educating students, we need to find a way to keep them here also.
The bill has not received a hearing yet. Jones says he's not sure when or if the measure will be heard. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
We get an update on other legislative action today from the Florida Channel's Bob Brooks.
On the last day of the first week of the 2018 Florida legislative session, bill actions included Senate Bill 140 and House Bill 335, entitled Marriage Licenses. This bill provides that a marriage license may not be issued to a person under the age of 18. On the Senate side, it passed the Rules Committee and heads to the full Senate. On the House side, the bill passed Civil Justice and Claims and has one more committee stop. House Bill 67 and Senate Bill 286 establishes the Florida Slavery Memorial on the Capitol Complex and provides for the administration of the memorial by the Department of Management Services. It passed government accountability and was sent to the full House. On the Senate side, the bill passed general government appropriations and has one more committee stop. And Senate Bill 568, entitled Telephone Solicitation. It adds voicemail transmissions to telephone calls and text messages in the Do Not Call program. It prohibits direct-to-voicemail transmissions to consumers who have communicated that they do not wish to receive further calls on behalf of a seller or a charity. Senate Bill 568 passed the Rules Committee and heads to the full Senate. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight, we end this first week of the legislative session on a cinematic note. A bill that addresses Florida's collapsing film industry was presented at a press conference on Wednesday of this week. As Andrew Quintana reports, if successful, its sponsors hope it will create a new era of filmmaking within the Sunshine State.
The problem is when the capsule moves from an elliptical orbit to a parabolic orbit. There's no mathematical formula for that. As we can calculate launch and landing, but without this conversion, the capsule stays in orbit. We can't bring it back home.
Back in 2016, the Oscar-nominated movie Hidden Figures released in theaters. The story focused on the three African-American women who served as the brains behind launching the first man into orbit. Cape Canaveral, Florida, where the film is located, is a key setting in this historic event, but not one scene was shot in Florida. In fact, the entire production took place in Georgia, where taxes for filming are lower. Many film productions have jumped on this growing trend and are using tax incentives as leverage to film in certain states. Florida is a place that's been affected by these decisions, State Senator Annette Tadeo says, something the senator is not pleased with.
These are high-paying jobs that support the middle class and infuse local economies with much-needed funds.
That is why the senator is filing Senate Bill 1606, establishing the Florida Motion Picture Capital Corporation, encouraging productions to look at Florida as a safe haven for financing. The bill also asks productions looking for financing to have Florida be an established setting in their stories in order to combat the false advertisement of Florida presented in other films.
And what really upsets me is when I'm watching TV and you see the credits of these shows or these films, and you see some of the shows that are supposed to be filmed in Florida. Look at Ballers, gone, right? Look at Claws, right?
That was Representative Joe Gruters, who is a sponsor of the bill in the House.
Look at, have these shows that are supposed to be filmed like in my community, in my district, and they have certain screenshots of the district, but then they're actually filmed in Georgia or Texas.
His gripes do not just lie with the representation of Florida, but the economic opportunity he says the state is missing out on with tourism.
The economic impact of the film industry here in Florida is huge, but there's long-lasting impacts long after the initial dollars are spent. We have a residual value that gets created with every time that people watch these shows over and over again. It drives tourism to Florida. All you have to do is look at Bloodline. I personally went to Key West and visited and went around the Keys and saw some of the highlights of the show that I saw.
Still, how to pay for it all, something the bill does not address. However, as the chair of the Motion Picture Association's Chris Ranning says, the proposal is working outside of those limits, leaving Florida taxpayers alone and focusing on smarter business decisions. He suggests financing could include asking the state for appropriations and working with other entities to invest.
There are other sources of capital available, perhaps smaller sources, but one of the fundamental principles is that the legislation exists, or the corporation exists, not to create profit, but to create economic impact. So any entity that wants to be involved financially that has that as a priority over profit would be welcome to join in. But yes, naturally, we're going to ask the state for an allocation and appropriation probably next year.
Those eventual appropriations will be a one-time request, says Ranum. He wants Florida to become a production destination.
Of course, we want productions from other parts of the country, but we have so many really good and established production companies in Florida. I won't name them because there are more coming up. We have our film school graduates, great opportunities for them to work on the $1 and $2 million movies. Those $1 and $2 million movies need this kind of financing very, very much.
Movies like Moonlight, produced by a Florida State University graduate, were championed at the press conference as the kind of films Tadeo says Florida's film industry should be investing in. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Andrew Quintana.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We thank our sister operation, the Florida Channel, and contributing Florida public radio stations. We also bid a fond farewell to Nick Evans, who's leaving Florida to join the Ohio State University public radio station, WOSU. Good luck, Nick, and go Buckeyes! Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.